top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
At last. For 70 years I have waited. I have sacrificed the use of so many so that you might live. And yet, I would trade all my powers for some way to make you see how helplessly I love you, that I even kill so that you might live. What a cruel joke. My power is nothing compared to the power your beauty has over me. I am your prisoner, a slave to that which I can never possess.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 245, Spookies.
Yeah, Spookies. Spookies from 1986. Now, one thing I want to say about Spookies is, first of all, I don't think this film has ever gotten a legitimate release. And I say that, I mean, obviously on VHS, but I don't think it has ever been released on DVD nor Blu-ray. And yet, this is a film that is extremely well-loved within the community. People love Spookies. Interestingly enough, this was my first viewing. I actually bought a bootleg of this at the very first Horrorama way back in 2014. We were so young and innocent back then.
And you never decided to delve into it until gentle nudging by me.
It was either the first Horrorama in 2014 or my first Shock Stock in 2015. I know it was the same guy, I remember that, the same vendor. I think he bought a bunch of stuff from him, he sold all those bootlegs in with the red cases and whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, no, I didn't for some reason. I just never got around to watching it until you suggested it, and thank you for suggesting it, because this movie was just what I needed at the time.
Generally, we like to eschew getting stuff off of YouTube and try to do our best to either do it through the legal channels, whether it's Netflix or some legal streaming service. But this one, I was poking around in the bowels of YouTube.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah,
again.
Here we go again. Yeah, the proctologist of social media, just poking around. And yeah, I came across this, and it triggered a memory again of the poster. These posters, phenomenal. The font is just so perfect. It's got this, like, a damsel in distress who's being torn at, almost like a Francisco de Goya painting, by all these, not Kandarian demons, but regular demons. And I thought, whoa, this is a great poster. The font is just so catching. And then nothing. It slipped my consciousness for decades. That's the wonderful thing about YouTube. Someone has uploaded it. It got 500,000 views, if I'm not mistaken. There's a pretty good copy of it on there. And just a fun, hilariously goofy and somewhat inept monster movie.
The only reason I'm condoning you watching this on YouTube is because of the fact that I watched a bootleg. I mean, you cannot get this. It's not commercially available either on DVD or Blu-ray. But
tell it to a judge, son. No, I agree. But, yeah, we're justified.
But you know what? I gotta say, man, watching this movie, it reminded me of a time that I forgot how much I miss. Like, it took me back to the old Suspect days, you know? When you and I, or either I would be there on my own, and you would be there on your own, be there together, we were just combing the shelves and, like, going, like, what looks good here? You know?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this film. Fuck, man. This is something new. Let's rent it. You know? And we'd rent all these movies sight unseen, and some of them were absolutely brilliant. And Spookies is certainly a movie that if I hadn't bought it at either Horrorama or Shockstock, you'll think you're about to burst out laughing right now.
No, I just, no, just this movie makes me so happy.
I would have totally rented this from Suspect, and I don't know. It's like I forgot how much I really miss having a video store in my life that I can go to on a weekly basis, which is a repository for all the fucked up shit I like to watch, all the horror, all the exploitation, all the grindhouse movies, and all the art house movies, and so on and so forth, and then have a community of like-minded people, like our friend Lewis, who's about to mount, what is this now, the fifth incarnation of Horrorama?
I believe so, yeah.
With his partner Chris Alexander, former editor of Fangoria, former editor of ChocolateDrop.com, now he's basically doing his own thing. And yeah, or Mark Thibodeau, for example, you know, the guy who did the illustrations for our first book, Death by Umbrella. I miss these guys. I miss talking to these guys. I miss getting these recommendations from them.
Yeah, it's not the same getting some aggregated thumbs up and star rating from thousands of unseen people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want your buddies to give you something special.
But it's funny, like, you really don't know what you have until it's gone, right? And as I'm talking about those old Suspect days, I'm kind of almost getting a little wistful. And I just want to say, and I even see the shirt you're wearing, Cannibal Girls. I remember you buying that at the first Horrorama.
Indeed, I did. Some Canadian content.
So I just want to say, you know, thank you, Lewis, for everything, man. Like, for...
Thanks for the memories.
All those years you had that store, man. You don't know how impactful that was on me as a movie watcher. I would not be the host of the Really Awful Movies podcast if I had not discovered Suspect Video when I was like 14, 15 years old. So thanks, Lewis. I think I went a bit of a tangent. Let's get back to Spookies.
Oh, well, just everything you'd want in a movie, and it's the product of two minds. I forget the directors' names. Oh, you could also say a third, because
there, like, they 90 directors on this thing?
Oh, who knows? Like, there's at least, let's say, three credited ones. Funding from, I think it was British, if I'm not mistaken.
The National Filmborn of Canada.
No.
The BBC?
The funding fell through. And a particular producer source, and things got considerably altered in the finished product, and you could tell. So this is the product of many directorial hands, and it's made the better for it.
Well, a lot of people
fucking hilarious
have the contention that this is a movie that was cobbled together in, like, Godfrey Ho style from, like, two other movies, because there are sort of plot lines going on currently that are not really...
You're so kind, yeah.
If they're related, it's like very tangentially. But no, it's not. From what I read, and this is what the filmmakers maintain, is it's not two films cobbled together. It's just a product of many hands and many different times. They started shooting this film, funding fell through, production shut down, they got some more money, they started up again. So, you know, a lot of continuity errors, a lot of weird things, just because of the fact of the situations that they had to work under.
And this is really, you're going to have to explain some things to me, because how these disparate
elements
came together, and this is as nonsensical a supposedly straightforward Scooby-Doo plot could be. It really isn't at all. Because in the beginning, you have this very unsettling, creepy scene between a drifter and a little kid whose birthday it is. His name is Billy, as is the case for every kid in every movie. I don't know how that's the case, but... And young,
it's so true, right? It's never Bill.
No.
It's Billy, right?
Yeah. It's occasionally Kevin, but I don't see any Chris's. I mean,
but
come on.
Why don't Bills just go by Bill when they're a kid? Or Billy? Why does that mean Billy?
I'm glad no one called me Chrissy growing up. But anyway.
You kind of look like Chrissy at this moment, but anyway.
And he has this weird discussion in the woods with a creepy man who's a drifter, no fixed address, homeless, whatever you want to call it, and you're wondering, like, where is this movie going? Like, is this,
where is it going, where is it coming from? This is like in the,
like,
first 10
in what street savvy Stranger Danger taught kid would be engaging in this lengthy discourse with a creepy homeless guy in the woods?
Okay, but this is also a kid that this movie made us invest ourselves in so much in the first like 20 odd minutes, only for him to be summarily buried alive by like some dog faced boy, you know, midway through, and we forgot about him entirely. Yeah. No, bye bye Billy. Yeah. Like, forget bye bye Birdie, right? Bye bye Billy. And yeah, that's the end of that.
So, Billy, today's the big day. First night away from home, kid.
What makes you say that?
You just seem kind of nervous.
I'm not nervous. You just startled me.
Give an old man a light. How old are you, kid? 12?
13.
No, you're not.
I am so. Today.
Yeah? Take my advice, kid. Go home.
Billy the Kid was no more, and he was attacked by some imp wearing this gold lamé, like a magician outfit.
Pretty
and
much, I was
like,
yeah.
What?
Like,
and then you're asking yourself.
Or Roy, right?
and you're just left wondering, like, well, they lead you down a garden path of, the natural thing would be, oh, the drifter is maybe some sort of perv, and he murders the kid.
What I think is hilarious is that you actually watch this movie trying to, like, form sort of coherent narrative in your head, some semblance of linear
storytelling.
No, because that's the whole thing, right? Because, honestly, this is a movie that ran for an economical 1 hour and 25 minutes, right? Now, when I watch movies for the podcast, I take notes. And I think, and this is what I'm trying to stop, I'm an over note taker in the sense that I write down like every little thing that happens moment by moment. Whenever we compare notes, I look at my notes, I'm like, oh my God, look at all this
I'm
shit.
An undertaker, so to speak.
Exactly.
Note taker, yeah.
But I'm trying to take less notes, right? And then what I often do is on one side, I will fill up a page with notes of like, this is what happened, this is what happened next. And the other side is my thoughts. And I'm often doing this, flipping back and forth, and it drives you nuts because
I'm the editor.
When you edit, you don't like hearing the sound of the podcast.
I can't fix everything in post.
But the thing is, despite all these notes I end up taking, we end up barely using the notes. We glance at it for the name of a character, and we end up just talking, right? So there I was, overtaking notes, you know, and like, okay, great dripping blood font and skeleton coming on screen. Simple but effective. Then a line of dialogue. The final foolish victim shall be here very soon. Fox shrouded graveyard. Wolf howling. Like I'm imagining writing, almost like I'm writing like the
script
itself.
Yeah.
And then, at one point, I had to say, fuck it. And the reason I had to say fuck it is because so much nuttiness happened the first 26 minutes of this movie that my notes, my first page, that I did not want to go beyond was pretty much done. So I said, you know what? So much happened already that makes it a great film. That I realized with 1 hour left, I better stop writing down notes entirely, or I'm going to write a fucking dissertation about nuttiness. So, we don't use half the notes half the time anyway, so, I stopped taking notes. But you know what, man? This is a film where the effects, for example, let's talk about special effects. They range from the ridiculous to the sublime. There is some incredible
there's
special...
There's some Fulci-esque rotting corpse effects, mm-hmm. and then there's stuff that's just...
It's
like dollar store.
Exactly. Yeah. Like a dollar store Halloween mask. There's no end to the weirdness on display in Spookies, but that's what makes it so hilarious. Yeah. I mean, another thing, you have these two cars going somewhere. I'm assuming a party or there's some hint that they...
Yeah, so they dispense with Billy the Kid and he is no more. And all of a sudden, but he was hanging out at this abandoned kind of mansion. That's where he was. That's where he met the drifter in the woods.
Yeah, well, why is
also
he doing
going
that?
To, who knows?
He was too young to be doing that. So.
And also going to the same locale as two groups of people who would never associate with one another in real life and yet somehow are brought together.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I look at my notes right now and I actually wrote down and I underlined it. That's what I do too when I want something to, like, I have to say this. And I wrote, in what world would these people be friends, man? Like, honestly, one guy's a sort of sunglass of night dude in a Canadian tuxedo, you know? And this other guy's like all straight laced and he looked in a suit and everything, yeah, and a tie. And he literally looked 40 years older than everybody else in his party.
It's true.
There's this one girl with her heaving bosoms in a sweater that seemed to show more and more cleavage with each successive scene. It was such a disparate group of people that, hey, you know what? I just saw Kid Barrett alive, you know, in the first 20 minutes.
I'm already in. Yeah,
and
I'm invested.
Everything else that comes is just gravy, so.
A couple members of this party, this Jersey boy named Duke, and it's almost like this welcome back Cotter, ridiculous, tough-talking Brooklynite.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like Juan Epstein kind of
thing.
You know,
like a John, John Travolta, I don't know what kind of, and then there's this woman with this.
Mr. Cotter.
A woman with an on-again, off-again, very not committed to the role, London English accent, very, very weak. But again, like you're discombobulated, at least, well, we both were, by looking at these people and going like, they both were ostensibly, because I remember some of the dialogue actually, that they were following one another.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they just knew about this place as a place to go and then should happen to be there together.
And
they were friends.
One car was complaining about the other car that they had to follow them, they're getting lost, and they got kicked out of a party, so we're going to go this way. In many ways, this film is like Baskin in the sense that, you know, a film we talked about a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
says you have people just driving and they end up somewhere where they shouldn't be, and you're like, why did they get there? How? For what reason? And mostly, why are they staying?
Yeah.
It seemed like they had no business. Okay, forget. In Baskin, that was a different thing altogether. But
yeah, they were police. They're called to somewhere. So they had business. Here, they made no overtures to the fact that this is a creepy house that you should explore. Like, no one said anything like that. They just why were they here?
But they see a man who's like this weird, like, vampire-like Rasputin sorcerer who's got a wife who looks about 40 years his junior, who's lying dead, and I mean, in the attic, and he's saying mumbo jumbo about, well, we need souls in order to resuscitate her, and this and that and the other, and it's nonsensical.
Well, this guy, he's a warlock named Creon. And he's like this.
I wrote that down.
Oh, a meticulous note taking.
Like
in
the way you said his name. It sounded
like Creon, like the gas. No, it's just like Creon.
Yeah, awesome.
And he's this. I mean, you know, the similarities to Phantasm don't end there, because he's a combination of Angus Scrimm with like F. Murray Abraham with his like horrific like Fiddler on the Roof Yiddish accent. Like, and he was almost like a, I don't know, like maybe Vincent Price would have this role back in the day, or somebody. Like, he was almost narrating it from the haunted house. Like, he was an otherworldly figure who had this manservant that we mentioned earlier, who was dressed up in the magician gear.
About accents that would slip in and out, and that's when I said, you know, is he fine or truly victim? Because he had this, like, I guess this was
like Romanian or something.
Yeah. Accent, but sometimes it would be there, other times it wouldn't. I mean, dude, even I gotta admit though, he was better than Kevin Costner, Robert from Prince of Thieves. With that,
oh, there's no like Stanislavski method going on here. Yeah, there's like accents in and out.
That
like,
famous British accent, right, which I think lasted like half a scene before he adopted his flat Midwestern drawl for that. We're having fun today.
Oh, this is just great. So yeah, these people are basically Scooby-Dooing their way through the house, and that's essentially.
I've never
it.
Heard anybody use Scooby-Doo as a verb before.
And they come upon,
that
of course,
awesome.
A Ouija board, and this is where some of the crackling dialogue
ever
comes along.
In your life, seen a Ouija board that looked like that? That was a very bizarre looking Ouija.
And as Duke, the loquacious Duke, put it, Ouija, what's that? It sounds stupid. Must belong to you, Jim, or something, as he's like taking the piss out of his buddy Jim. And yeah, he had just the most meat-headed lines.
What's this supposed to be?
Looks sort of like a Parcheesi game or something.
I know what this is. I mean, I've never seen one like this before. It's a Ouija board.
Ouija board? That sounds stupid. Hey, Rich, this must belong to you.
But there's something missing. It's supposed to come with a,
there.
That's the thing that fell out of the box on the shelf.
Well, how do you play? Don't you need dice or something?
But of course, you know, after they explain to Duke how one uses a Ouija, and one other character explains, you ask it questions, and then it gives you a yes or no.
But it didn't,
didn't
it look more like a Chinese checkerboard to you than a Ouija?
Instead of like the typical triangle-shaped pointer, it seemed
planchette
like some...
Planchette or whatever.
Oh, a planchette. Look at you, like Mr. Thesaurus here. it It was like an African mask, and they were pointing that. It was so like true. This spear or something. It was very weird.
And
like,
meanwhile, every response to the Ouija board is being Kate controlled
Blanchett.
By...
Kate sorry.
Kate, by that bizarre warlock name. What's his name again?
Creon.
I love it. I love the way you say that name. It just sounds cool. That's why I wanted you to repeat it again. What I'm trying to say to you, Chris, is you're trying to describe the plot of this movie, and it makes no sense.
No.
It's a
he wants their soul, so it's like yes. like Phantasm. Like he wants,
but he wants their souls because that will help him resuscify,
or revivify,
resuscitate. Let's
okay,
just use
okay,
that word.
Yeah, yeah.
Resuscitate his dead wife. It's almost like I don't know if I can think of an analogy. And again, it's very vampiric. Maybe
voodoo.
One of the Hammer horror films. I think Rip Pitt, I believe, was the same sort of thing. Blair Bathory. We need a virgin's blood. Whatever. Ooh. In this case, it was souls, but. When he does, spoiler alert, resuscitate her, she's not too happy to be resuscitated.
No. Yeah, their marriage doesn't seem to be on particularly solid ground here. That was just
Considering the fact that he looked to be all about 70 and she looked to be all about 20,
kind of
explained.
Oh my god. Another character I thought was just absolutely hilarious. Is this guy who looked a little bit like John Waters. And I don't know why, like who this... costume designer was on this flick. There probably wasn't one, but he was wearing a shirt. He was wearing a shirt with his own face on it, and he had a ventriloquist puppet that he spoke to, like much to the annoyance of all the viewers and his compatriots there. But I thought, like, that was just such an odd effect. Like he had his own face on his own shirt, and he had, you know, John Waters' mustache is just very, very strange.
Okay, but that is kind of strange.
and all these people are doing is wandering through the house as presumably, I guess, okay, this was kind of cool. The Ouija board tips them off that that they're not going to be able to leave the house, because by this point they're being set upon by Kandarian demons and various gargoyle-type creatures.
Oh, I remember about those muck monsters that they had flatulent problems. You're farting up a storm.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, flatulence, I think, was added in post, and the original creators were not impressed. This is according to what I read. This is kind of a neat thing by Heather Wixon from Daily Dead.
Yep,
and,
yep.
Yeah, so that was... You know, kind of, yeah.
You put a lot of research into this.
I did.
I'm amazed. Like, normally I'm the guy with the meticulous research, the notes, you know, detailing every scene. Like, I just threw away my notes because I don't know.
Oh my god, it's like inside the actor's studio. And like, I'm James fucking Lipton here. And yeah, just digging out all these details. But this is a movie, like, really is an hour of Carnival Haunted House, where you go and you pay $5. Mm-hmm. And you go to the carnival, and things pop out at you, and that's it. And then you go through disparate experiences, and then you come out at the end. So you have ghosts, you have severed hands, limbs, mm-hmm. and then that's it. Like, this is one long carnival Halloween house.
Yep.
Like, but and yet
it's not a carnival of souls, but it's a carnival all the same. And you know what? That's a very apt analogy. And who doesn't like a carnival?
Yeah.
Who doesn't like a haunted house ride at a carnival?
I mean, I guess the same people don't like a parade.
I don't like a parade, but... No. Like
isn't
a parade?
That... Well, how did the expression, everyone loves a parade, come about?
I don't know.
Well, maybe if it's... Yeah, I don't know. No, maybe in North Korea, you don't want to be part of a parade? I don't know. But... I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that, but... But, yeah, like... This has carnival-esque elements. They have a weird... So, like a non-entity of a kid who just disappears, which immediately grasped you. If they didn't have the kid, it would be a different movie entirely.
Well, I don't know. I mean, all I'm saying is, like, if this is maybe 20-odd minutes of setup, which really was still wacky as I'll get out, and then another hour of just carnival-esque shenanigans, who doesn't like a carnival? Everyone loves it. We love those rides. We love when you walk in and things pop out at you, and then something else, you walk in another room and something else disparate pops out at you, and you're exhilarated and you're laughing and you're maybe a little scared, but not really. And it's just, it's cathartic. It's life affirming. And that's what watching this movie is. It's just this, like, sort of fun experience where you check your brain at the door. And you just watch this thing for its own merits, and you're going to have the time of your life.
What was that Peter Cushing thing we podcasted on the train?
We were on the train podcast?
No, it was set on a train.
Okay,
and Peter Cushing's
Horror Express.
Horror Express, yes. Yeah. There was this death creature wielding a scythe, and he had these gleaming red eyes, and it just immediately reminded me of the creature in Horror Express. So it was pretty cool. There was some, like,
saying this film actually had a legitimate, deliberate homage to Horror Express?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, exactly. No, and then they used, like, the typical cheesy synthesizer that was nascent at the time to modulate some of the one of the demonic voices, which was thought hilarious. Like, it was a throwback to some of the low-budget films we really delved into midway through the progression of our show. Talking really low-budget, because clearly not much in the way of funds were sunk into this film. I think it would be fair to say, I'd estimate in 1986 dollars, this has to be less than $500,000 for sure. This film in upstate New York at some estate. It was very, very threadbare production. Mm-hmm. The effects, yeah, again, ran the gamut from amazing to jaw-droppingly
awful,
horrendous. Yeah. But God,
maybe the good effects were early in production when they had money, and the bad effects were at the tail end when they had no money.
It's possible, and you got to just admire, like, the panache and the brio and just the balls of
the
whoever.
Hubris, you know?
Oh yeah, like, why? Who would have thought this was a good idea? Like, this. In 1986, so I think Goonies was released a year prior. So this, obviously, the title is similar. Maybe they were capitalizing on Ghoulies, Goonies, like Spookies. I don't know, Speakeasy. I'm not sure where they're going with it. But
I'm not sure where you're going with this either.
Setup. But yeah, I'm not sure where this went at the box office, but this is a hella fun movie.
I don't even remember, like, this thing ever coming out in the cinemas. Which is fine. I mean, there was a lot of straight-to-video horror movies that were coming out at the time. But yeah, I mean, in 1986, I was very cognizant of every movie that would come out, because that was what I would do every Friday, is pull out the entertainment section. What is coming out this week? I don't recall this film ever having a legitimate theatrical release. And frankly, I don't even recall seeing it in the video store as much as a child. I started seeing this film on the bootleg circuit at cons, and that's when Spooky started to become ubiquitous to me, and I learned about the sort of cult nature of Spooky. So I don't know,
it's weird but wonderful, and it has a lot of Italian elements in it as well. Like, definitely the denouement and the setup, like, you couldn't get any more otherworldly Italian, like, with the strange voices, although they happen to be speaking English barely in some cases. But yeah, it had that otherworldly, because it made no fucking sense. So maybe I always ascribe that to some of the Italian movies, but just people wandering around in a house with demons popping out, that's Fulci right there.
Yeah, it seems to me that for you, every time you say it's Italian-esque or has Italian elements, it's sort of shorthand for, like, weird shit's happening, I don't understand.
Well, it's very true. What did we learn?
For a movie as mindless as this, I mean, sometimes one thing that we've tried to do many times on this podcast is take things that are maligned and try to elevate them in a sense by analyzing them or finding things that are redeeming and so on and so forth. With a film like this, you can't elevate it in any way. You just have to enjoy it on the level it's...
There are no metaphorical nuggets to unearth. There's no metaphor.
There's no
simile.
There's no rhetorical device in this film whatsoever. But what there is a shit ton of fun, amazingly disparate, yet bizarre, yet fantastic, yet horribly rendered, yet wonderfully rendered creatures coming at you. There's never a dull moment. Yeah. You're never bored. And it's, you know, I hate using the term so bad it's good, but this is a movie that is bad, but it's also really good, and that's the end of that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is what I learned is that you don't always have to elevate things. Sometimes
you just
appreciate
wallow
things on its own merits, and that's it. That's what I did with this one.
I learned that there was the character who was supposed to be, I guess, a contemporary of Duke, the Brooklynite. He could have been their dad. He's this old square guy with his wife, and they're driving, like, behind them going, you lousy kid, one of those type guys. He was kind of a combination physically. I don't know if you're gonna agree with this. He's part John Ritter, part Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Like, I couldn't separate that when I saw them. It's like, this is so effing weird.
That's bizarre.
It was.
But another thing I wrote down that I thought was hilarious was, yeah, I mean, he obviously looks 40 years senior than everybody else in his party. And at one point, I think it's the one with the British accent kept going in and out.
And she wanted a
kid.
Yeah.
She said, okay, kids, let's go. I think I know where we're going now. This guy's 60. You're 20. I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe he's young at heart. And then another thing I learned, like they have this protracted fight scene. This character, this button-up square, and Duke, when they get into this argument and they have this protracted fisticuffs, duke it out session, like the typical, like you hit someone.
Unintended or no?
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. And then falling on a coffee table, and then that breaks your fall, like the all-time action movie cliche of fights where you fall through a table. And I thought, like, this thing went on for all of 15 minutes, and the other characters, there must have been, and that's what makes this movie also unique for horror of this type, is that there's tons of characters. Like, I couldn't keep them straight. There might have been at least a dozen. Usually it's four or five. Like, I'm thinking of the Hell Knight podcast with Linda Blair. There's like five people. One of the guys is a surfer. You got Linda Blair. She's uppity, whatever. Put them in there. They get hunted down. You know who's who. Here, I didn't know any of these people. And like, there's people who had like all of maybe 20 lines of dialogue. Other barely said a peep. And they're all just together. They did not equalize their screen time whatsoever. Another thing I learned is that they found, I thought it was kind of neat how the Creon character would telegraph certain things. So he was communicating them to them from the great beyond, and this involved, through the Ouija board, telling them when they were going to
die
and what he tells one of them how he guesses, I guess, like a carnival, like how old you are. And the woman is supposed to be 24, the Brit, and she looks all of, like, again, like 39, whatever. With one of their names, they was on the gravestone. And so they thought, oh, my God, like, maybe we shouldn't venture out there because that's our we're going to be preordained for that. So I thought that was fun, and that's what I learned. Star rating.
Okay, just objectively, Spookies is not a good movie, but subjectively, for the experience that I had watching this movie, how much I enjoyed it, I'm giving this. Yeah, I'm giving it 4 stars. I'm just throwing 4 stars at the mat lately, but I'm giving it 4 stars.
Yeah. 4 stars as well. There's a fantastic scene. Screw you, Seven. There's a severed head in a box here that I thought was absolutely fantastic. 4 star for me.
And it was interesting because I remember that scene thinking, it's not a dick in a box. It's a head in a box. So, yeah.
Well, listen to these two dicks talking about movies every week for your listening pleasure. Genre films touting the best and worst of horror cinema. And
happy Halloween.
Yeah. And tune in for more engaging, lively discussions on all your favorite flicks. And listen to new episodes of the podcast uploaded for your listening pleasure every Friday.
Take care.
Hey everyone, Chris Lombardo here from the Really Awful Movies podcast. A reminder that our book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, is available on Amazon in soft, hard, and electronic versions. LA Weekly said this about our book. It's rich with context and analysis, gruesome, yet all in good fun, a celebration of the horror genre. It'd mean a lot to us if our listeners can pick up a copy, because we're really Patreon-averse and don't feel like charging our listeners. Ever.